Stripe is the go-to choice for AI companies, from early-stage startups to scaled enterprises. 78% of the leading AI companies use Stripe to go to market quickly and scale globally. That includes pioneers like NVIDIA, OpenAI, and Perplexity. Stripe has developed cutting-edge tools to improve everything from fraud detection to checkout optimization. Whether you're aiming for incremental gains or planning for enterprise transformation, see how Stripe can help at stripe.com.
My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll chat to Samsung Ireland about the brand new S25 Edge. We'll hear about the recruitment challenges for those looking to hire both sides of the Atlantic. And as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so right now. Drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. Or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. It has been another stunning week here in Dublin anyway. I hope it's been nice where you are. I have spent the last few days pottering around in my garden, talking to my plants. That's my entire personality now. I've been chatting to Kieran Cudahy over the last few weeks about different app recommendations. I'm all about using technology to help me get more done in my garden. I might be the dullest person in Ireland, but you know what? I'm happy about it. One thing that I've been playing around with in recent times is using ChatGPT to help bring my garden notions to life. It's been really good to help me visualize and plan what we're doing around the place. So if you're working on any projects, take a picture of the space that you're working with and then be very descriptive and prescriptive with whether it's ChatGPT or Copilot or Google's Gemini, and ask it to take the image and do X, Y, and Z. So in my case, I've asked it to take the image of my front garden and show me what it would look like if a path went from one side to the other and the path would be made up of little pebbles and blah, 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 blah. The more specific you are, the better it is. And once you see it come up on the whatever platform it is, you're like, oh, I could do that. Or it looks absolutely horrific. No way at all. But it's just something to consider. It works really well as well if you're considering, you know, changing your kitchen round or changing colours. That's my top tip. Have a play around and use these platforms that exist to help you make changes in and around your space. It's so easy to do. What I would say is if you're doing it on ChatGPT, it can take a while to render the image. But from my side anyway, it has definitely been worth it just to help get stuff done. So that's my little top tip for you there now. But moving right along to one of the big announcements from this week, which came from Samsung. So Samsung unveiled their S25 range at the beginning of the year, and they teased us that something else was coming down the tracks. I'm delighted to say that Quentin Doran O'Reilly of Samsung Ireland is with me now to talk through what the company unveiled on Tuesday of this week. Quentin, I always love chatting with you because you're as nerdy as I am when it comes to phones. Before we get into the nitty-gritty, just tell me a little bit about this new phone.
So you're right. Something new and exciting is on the way. It's not wholly unanticipated insofar as at the very end of the formal unpacked of the Galaxy S25 family in January, at the very, very end, we teased something extra was going to come. And then we said nothing about it until now. And today, is Tuesday the 13th, but I don't think this is going out till later on the week, we formally announced the launch of the Galaxy S25 Edge, which is the slimmest Galaxy S series device we have ever launched. But it's really important to remember that, this is the slimmest device, but what we're not doing is compromising in any way, manner, shape, or form. It's a device that's going to balance perfectly between form and function. And at just 5.8 millimeters thick, it's going to be the most portable, lightest 6.7 inch screen you've ever seen on the Galaxy. It's very exciting.
It is exciting. And I think when I heard murmurs about this, I was excited. As you know, I've been a longtime Samsung fan. And I wonder, could you just talk me through what you mean when there's no compromise? Because I think if you read the spec sheet of this alongside the S25, is it that they're not meant to be comparable, that it's another addition to the ecosystem? Or what way does that work?
It's absolutely another addition to the ecosystem. So this covers off lots of things that customers have been asking us for. We already have loyalists for our S25 base and for the Plus model. And as you yourself know, the Ultra models with the S Pen included, we have some really loyal customers, but we're constantly getting feedback that folks would like something thinner, more pocketable, with all the bells and whistles that we have on the S25 family. And that's what we're bringing to market. We're bringing a device that is, as I said, just 5.8 millimeters thick. It's 163 grams, but still has that same Snapdragon 8 Gen 3 processor built for Galaxy. So it is blisteringly fast. And because you've got a processor that fast, you can make a smaller battery and still get one day plus life out of the device. We've also included a true flagship level camera. So this is going to rock a 200 megapixel main shooter, so that there is no compromise in this device whatsoever. It's got everything you need. To address your first question, it fits into the portfolio for a whole new customer segment. And that's really who we're talking to for this.
Okay, so who is that customer? Because I saw some of the reviewers, I think they were US-based reviewers, who were focused in on the telephoto lens, the size of the battery, and they were kind of struggling to figure out where exactly it sits and who it was talking to. So who is the design, who is the ultimate customer for the new phone?
I think you can talk about a few different folks. People who really want a flagship level performance. But also, this is very much a style shout. This is all about the design. It's the fact that it is such a beautifully thin and sleek and slick device that's feeding into that fashion and style shout as much as it is into the technology side of things. So We're talking about something which is going to be just appreciably different. And one of the things that you'll see in form factors over the last little while is that everyone's starting to play with it a little bit. We're back to that lovely place we were in maybe 15 years ago, where people are able to create different form factors of a device. And just like we did back then, we're now at a point in the technology where we can make things that fold and bend and make them as thin as you like. All the restrictions that we had in the past are beginning to dissipate again as the smartphone category starts to evolve.
Yeah, it's something that John Riley and I have spoken about on the program over the last few years. It's getting increasingly difficult to talk about smartphones because they're all powerhouses. Even your own A50, the A range is incredible, and what they can pack into a phone at that price point is incredibly impressive. Can you just tell me a little bit about the reasoning for the tease at the end of the S25 launch and then the official launch of the Edge device here in May 2025?
As in why we didn't launch them all together?
Yeah.
I think because we're developing something appreciably new and fresh, we didn't want to confuse or not confuse. We have customers who are really waiting for their next Galaxy S, be it the base model 25 or the Plus or the Ultra. And if we put in a new one at that stage, I think it would have genuinely caused a little confusion. This needed its own space. It's something new and fresh and different. And so I think holding back was probably the right thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it gave us a chance to tell a larger story, which is, of course, what you've started seeing today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the new form factor is really interesting. I'm excited to have it in the hand. I always go around with my phone in my back pocket and you can feel the bulk of the phone. And I do think that the new form factor would suit people like me who kind of always have it on their person but don't want the heft that some of the phones on the market at the moment have. I was talking to Annika Bison when the new S25 range was unveiled. And there was a lot of talk about the AI on the phone. I'm assuming that comes as standard with this new model as well.
Yeah, the Galaxy AI story has just gone from strength to strength since we first launched it on the S24 family last year. And of course, that was a really key driver for the launch of the S24. Indeed, that became the biggest S-series flagship launch we had ever had, with the biggest pre-order. And we've continued that story into 25. And truthfully, we weren't sure if the story was getting a little old by the time we launched with the S25 and even the subsequent Fold 6 and Flip 6. But because the technology and our partnership with Google in Gemini has gone from strength to strength and the capabilities have grown, the story is by no means done, and it continues on the S25 Edge. We've added all the bits that you would expect, like audio eraser, like writing assist, like that multimodal input, which allows you to use your voice or text or even pictures to interact with the device and get the results that you want. So there is a huge amount embedded in this device. And again, it's the capabilities are growing daily at this stage.
Yeah, the ad campaign around the S25 was great because it showed practical examples of how, when and why you would use this. Do you guys get any ongoing feedback or even quarterly feedback in terms of what features users like and are using and, you know, forming a view of what they would like to see in the next iteration?
We'd certainly get some visibility on what's being used by customers, and therefore we can build on that. We're very, very lucky, Jess, insofar as we've got a very big R&D department, and of course Google have the same. And between them, you've got an awful lot of people who are much smarter than me coming up with all the new stuff. I'm in the very lucky position where I just get to sit here and get told what's coming next. But you're right, it's driven very much by partly customer demand and partly by what the guys get to think of.
We've been talking for many, many years now. And what I always enjoy when I chat to you is that you're as big a dork, if not more than me, when it comes to phone technology, what the phones can do, the power of them. I remember years ago you sitting in the News Talk office showing me the first iteration of the foldables. Is this an exciting time for mobile phone technology, or are we in an era now of just iterating and reiterating what has worked for the last 5 years?
You know what? I've been mulling this one too, because we did very quickly after sort of S22, S23, start to look at it and go, Gosh, in terms of form factor, it is just a slab of glass, and where can you go from here? But of course, in the interim, we started introducing, as I said earlier, plays on the form factor, and the capabilities are starting to appreciably change. So you're right, we were absolutely in danger of just iterating that slab of glass. I think with the introduction of AI, with the introduction of the really slim form factor now, and with the introduction of foldable, things are starting to shake up a bit again. And that's really, really exciting.
One of the questions that I think someone like you would be good to answer is one that I get often, and that is, I need a new phone. I like, playing the New York Times Wordle, the crossword, answering some emails, watching a bit of Netflix. I'm being offered the S range. Would the A range do? Like, how do people go about deciding where they sit on the smartphone spectrum? Because I'm sure you would say that not everybody needs the power of an S phone.
No, they don't. And I mean, that's why we have such a broad breadth of portfolio. I know I heard you the other day talking about the A56, which is a mini powerhouse. But we have devices right from the A16 all the way up to the Fold 6. And for every use case, there's a device really. And of course, not everyone can invest in an S series device. They are expensive. So that's why we have A series upwards. But in all of them, you will have some level of intelligence. So for the A series, we have what we call Awesome Intelligence, which incorporates quite a lot of the features you'd see in Galaxy AI. As you go up the stack, what you tend to see is maybe faster processors, better cameras. By the time you get to S series, then you're talking about wireless charging and reverse wireless charging, which is still a very cool feature. And then again, you go up the stack and you get things like the S Pen on the S25 Ultra, which is still one of the key purchase drivers for the Ultra device and one of my personal favorites. I know I rant about that one quite a lot, but it is wildly exciting. And then, of course, for foldable, well, they have whole new use cases in and of themselves.
Yeah, how has the foldable and the flip gone down with customers? Because I'm seeing more and more of the flip in particular. Every few days, I will see someone, whether it's on the Lewis or walking down Grafton Street. I know some of my own colleagues have them. How has the feedback been on that range?
Really, really positive. And again, as we go through each iteration, the use cases become a little more established. So people understand that they're not just really cool looking devices, but they are really practical as well. For the flip, the fact that it essentially behaves as its own tripod, if you're in a video call or taking pictures, you can just leave it sitting on its hinge, flash your hand at it, and it takes a picture straight off. Or if you're on a video call, you don't have to balance it against anything. The Fold is becoming increasingly seen as that productivity powerhouse where you don't always have to use the main big screen. It functions as a normal, for want of a better phrase, smartphone when it's closed, and the use it's becoming easier to use as that, as well as the device form factor changes a little bit. So I think we're becoming, as a whole, much clearer on what foldable does, apart from the fact that it's foldable Super AMOLED glass. And again, that is just the coolest thing.
Yeah, the novelty of it still hasn't worn off. Anytime I see one, I get that wow moment when they move with an app open on a closed over and they open it out and the app continues. It is stuff from the Jetsons that people are just walking around in their pocket, which is amazing. My final question was just, we talk a lot every week when I'm answering questions. People are looking for refurbished devices from, I suppose, an environmental point of view, but also from a financial point of view. Where's Samsung at in terms of that refurbished ecosystem, especially now when devices are lasting much longer than they would have even back in the S3, S4 days?
They are. So there's a couple of different answers to that. First and foremost, it is something that we're looking at. We've already launched a program in our office in the UK, and that will come eventually to Ireland as well. These things take a little time to work on. You're right, people are hanging on to their devices a little bit longer. So the average in this country is now circa 34 to 36 months before people jump onto their next device. That in and of itself is quite, A, it's good for the environment, but B, for the users, it becomes a really cool thing because your next device is 3 years down the line in terms of capabilities and technologies, which means that even though the some of the changes from year to year might be seen as incremental, by the time you're doing it for 2 to 3 years, the wow factor is still there. And that's, you know, something that we're very glad our customers can experience.
Look, it is a very exciting time for Samsung as somebody who is a fan of the range. And also just seeing how you guys are playing with the form factor. It is brilliant to see. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thank you very much, Jess.
Yeah, always love talking to Quentin. As I mentioned there, I haven't tested the phone yet. I'm excited to test the phone. I was a little bit skeptical when I read the press release and was talking to Pat Kenny about it on Tuesday, purely because of the compromises that appear to exist on the spec sheet. Now, as Quentin said, the phone has been optimized to still give you excellent battery performance despite a lower battery capacity. There are a whole host of different bits and pieces between the lenses and then the AI within the phone to ensure the camera is still really good. So I'll be interested and excited to get my hands on it and put it through its paces, and I'll have that review for you hopefully in the next few weeks. But I'd love to know your thoughts. You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, one of the big talking points in this office anyway has been The Last of Us Season 2. I'll be honest, I haven't been watching it, but I know people at home and people in this very building who are quite disappointed by how season 2 is playing out. Have you been watching it and are you annoyed about it? Few people have been saying to me that it's too closely aligned to the game and they've kind of ruined it. Other people are still buzzing about it. Let me know what you think. Techtalk@newstalk.com. I mentioned at the top of the show about my use of ChatGPT to help me plan my garden. Do you know what show I have been loving? And this will tell you all you need to know about me. Super Garden on RTE1 on Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. It is pure joy. Paul Harrington, who you may know from The Lyrics The Thing on the Pat Kenny Show, he is the voice of it. You have a number of gardening enthusiasts who are given a garden to make over. And it is my go-to comfort show. We have watched all of the seasons. They're all up on the RTE player. And I am buzzing for Tuesday evening for the next episode. If there's anything else gardening related, I'm into my wholesome gardening DIY content. I'd love to get your recommendations. The email again is techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, last week's show came to you from Boston. I was there as part of Ireland Gateway to Europe. And when we come back here on News Talk, I'm going to bring you a chat that I had with an Irish recruitment firm who talked me through some of the challenges and opportunities that come from hiring in two jurisdictions. Stay tuned.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Yeah, as ever, if you want to get in touch, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Instagram @JessKellyNT. And speaking of the Instagram, I am running the VHI Women's Mini Marathon in aid of Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. This is my second year doing it. The Dublin Rape Crisis Centre is one of News Talk's charity partners. We have worked very closely with them over the last number of years, and I am very proud to be running to raise as much as I possibly can for them. I have a competition up over on my Instagram. If you go to instagram.com/JessKellyNT or just open the app and search for Jess Kelly NT, you will see the competition there. But there's also a link to my iDonate page. So I'm hoping to raise €2,000 before the June bank holiday weekend. I'm nearly at 50%. I'm just shy of €1,000. So if you have a fiver to spare, I would be incredibly grateful if you would consider donating it. Every single cent that we raise is going directly to the DRCC, which does the most remarkable work. So if you have a few quid and you'd like to donate it to a very good cause, I would be delighted to be the vehicle that brings it to them. So you can head to idonate.ie/run4DRCC. And as I said, every single cent is going directly to that incredible cause. I'm going to have more about my prep for the mini marathon on next week's show, but I just wanted to put it out there. Every single euro makes a difference. And thank you indeed to everybody who's donated thus far. Now, last week's show came to you from Boston. I was there as part of the Ireland Gateway to Europe trip 2025. I mentioned at the end of the show that I had even more good stuff to bring you from that trip. And that's what we're going to do right now. I met with Declan and Niall McNiff of Real Time Recruitment, and they told me what it is that they do.
We're a recruitment company. We have specifically focused on tech and transformation. We have offices in Dublin, Belfast and Boston, and we cover things from permanent recruitment, contract recruitment. We have a nearshore team that we can supply, and we also do executive search.
Okay, and how long have you guys been in operation?
Since 2005, so this September will be 20 years in business.
Oh, wow, congratulations. And so, Declan, you've obviously then in 20 years seen a lot of changes coming into account, particularly with those three bases that you have. Can you just talk me through some of the sort of landmark moments over the last two decades that have influenced the business that you're in?
Yes, well, Niall and I would have worked for a big player before we went out and started, so we weren't reinventing the wheel. Mm. It was about providing great service, but putting the customer first. And that's worked really well. We have a 97% client retention rate, thankfully, due to the hard work of the team. But the key milestones, we were only up and running 2005 and 2008. We all know what happened then. Yeah. But at the same time, Niall and I were skilled as contract recruiters. And once the permanent stopped, and we already had a contract book, which is a recurring revenue model. And once you have that in place, it keeps the wheels of the business going, and you need to make oxygen in any business, or profit in any business. Profit is like oxygen. Mm. If you're not making money, you can't reinvest and grow. And thankfully, Niall looked after the finances. I was more on the sales side, and the business grew from strength to strength. But we opened a Belfast office in 2011. We're headquartered in Sandyford in Dublin, and in 2021, due to demand from our clients, American clients in Ireland and in Belfast, they said, we'd love your service in America because the American staffing market is underserved.
So just tell me a little bit about choosing Boston as the location for that operation versus anywhere else in this big old country.
Yeah, basically we wanted somewhere on the East Coast. We wanted somewhere where, I think it was where the Irish diaspora was. Mm. It was also because some of the clients that we deal with in Ireland, both north and south, had a sort of a Boston or New York focus. Mm. So again, it made it quite a logical sort of reason for us to set up there. And again, any time we've come over, invariably you just keep bumping into Irish people. Mm-hmm. And again, the hours are quite easy to work. Obviously, just a five-hour difference, and you've all across the sort of the eastern side there. So again, we've worked with clients from Boston. And as a result, we haven't had success with them. They then ask you to, can you work other roles in different states, which are slightly, obviously, further away than Boston. But it doesn't matter. It's the same process. And again, it's really about knowing what the customer wants, listening, understanding, and advising them where you can and helping them.
Mm. One of the themes that we spoke about on last week's show was just understanding the local market, so where you're going. So what works in Dublin might not work in Toronto, might not work in Boston. How different is the market, say, from the work that your Dublin HQ does versus the Boston office?
It was a bit of a shock at the start because America is about quantity. So the first few roles we got on with clients, they said, yeah, provide us with 40 resumes and then we'll start shortlisting for interview. So we put a package together detailing how long that would take us in man-hours, how long it would take their team in man-hours, and also by the time they get through to the 40th candidate, that could be the best candidate, but they're gone off the market. So actually, when you put it together and explained it to the clients, it was like a light bulb moment. And a number of clients that we work with now in America follow the processes that our clients follow in Dublin. So it's about quality over quantity. If we're providing 40 CVs or my team, it's a waste of their time and they're not doing the job right. But if we get to know exactly what the client needs and provide them with three to five resumes that are absolutely spot on and give them a real good quality choice, then that's job done.
And now Declan just kind of referenced the man hours that goes into this type of work, but obviously AI has come to the fore. There's been a lot of talk. We've spoken on this program numerous times about the benefits from a productivity point of view, but also the key considerations that different sectors need to take into account when it comes to, say, bias or just the processing of data on a mass scale and the impact that that could have on the human being. How have you seen it enter your sector, and has it been a bit of a disruptor?
Yeah, it has been a disruptor. We implemented a new CRM last year, and I went and looked at it about 18 months ago, and effectively it was there was a lot of AI already built in. Now, since I looked at that and today, this AI has just exploded. It's everywhere. Everybody talks about it. Everybody wants it. Everybody wants to implement it into their journey. But not everybody knows exactly what they want from AI. And AI is about, I think they say it's about changing human behavior. Yes, it's a lot of it's around technology focus, but effectively it's about changing the processes and how people work. And that includes ourselves. If we were sending, if somebody in my team was sending out five CVs a day, it could take them 30 minutes to 60 minutes maybe to do that work. Now that's done all within 5 to 10 minutes. So again, it's just about validating as you go in terms of the process, to see that AI is doing what exactly you want it to do. But it has been a huge disruptor, and having spoke to several people who, let's say, are very, very, very strong in AI, nobody's an expert in it, they would say that some of the wins that they would see are sitting in a client's office and basically just observing what is going on, and then off the back of that making recommendations, because quite often clients, what they think they want might not be exactly what they need.
And one thing that we spoke about last week when we were in Toronto was the difficulties or the potential challenges that different zonal regulations might have, right? So we have the EU AI Act in Europe. There's a different approach, or lack thereof, in North America.
Yes.
How difficult is that for you guys to navigate, particularly when you have, again, two bases in Europe, or in the European region, and one then in America?
Well, definitely from the data point of view, everybody owns their own data, or should own their own data. So being well-versed with the European laws and GDPR and everything makes you very cautious coming over here. Like, there's questions you can't ask a candidate in America. You can't ask them what salary they're on. You can in Ireland. You can't ask them that question in America. So they could tell you any figure that they're looking for, but you can't validate what they're actually on. So from a data point, being able to access data, you have to be very careful. And the other thing about America is the laws are different state to state, Jess, and you have to be so careful. We get terms and conditions from clients, and we're working with them in Boston, but the terms might be from Texas. So you have to be aware that the terms in Texas on how the implication of that. So it is, look, the opportunity here is massive for business in America, and the opportunity for growth is massive, but you have to be very, very careful because.
Yeah, and just to add to that, we were at an event last night and they talked about the US regulation versus EU and then innovation. And it was basically highlighted that innovation needs an environment where there's a lot of change, a lot of flux for it to thrive. And then they were saying that the EU needs to be sort of a bit careful because it might stifle innovation, whereas they were saying that the US is very pro-innovation in comparison. But their ways of getting around it, it was somebody in a global firm where collaboration across all the different offices across the globe can basically give you the ideal sort of outcome that might come out of the US market.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so as we started the conversation with sort of a look at what you guys do, we know, and everybody's sick to the back teeth of talking about the turbulence that exists at the moment. What impact is the political landscape having on the recruitment world?
Oh, it's definitely, it's been a tough 12 months in recruitment across the board. Once you had the big guys make major redundancies in these, to go back to your previous point, just about data, they have our data, they know our buying trends and hiring trends. And once they started letting people go, it gave everybody the jitters. Then you had the geopolitical side, which has caused a lot of nervousness in boardrooms around the world. And you throw in on top of that the AI conundrum. Mm. Where do we spend our money in AI? Because it's so changing so quickly. You can invest over on the right-hand side and then find out that you should have been over on the left-hand side. So it's created a lot of inertia in the market. And because of that, clients aren't hiring in the numbers that they were. And a lot of them are thinking, they're looking at, and there's Niall, myself and yourself here, standing here, Jess, and they're thinking, do we need Niall, Jess and Declan? Or do we need Jess and a good co-pilot license and get her skilled up in AI and all of a sudden more efficiency, less people? Yeah. So there's a lot of questions trying to be answered at the moment. And the answers just aren't there because the landscape is changing so quickly.
Yeah, that was Niall and Declan McNiff of Real Time Recruitment speaking to me in Boston as part of Ireland Gateway to Europe. And I've been mulling over and thinking back on our time on that trip over the last few days. It was so beneficial to be on the ground and understand the differences and requirements that exist when you are doing business on both sides of the Atlantic. There's so many things to consider. One big plus, and this came up in both Toronto and in Boston, was the ease of movement between the two regions. We heard from Deirdre Giblin last week on the show that there is an appetite for even more flights from Ireland, different parts of Ireland indeed, to Canada. I mentioned on the show that we flew with Aer Lingus directly into Toronto on one of the 4 daily flights between the two cities. We flew home with Aer Lingus direct from Boston, and I was able to work on the plane because of the Wi-Fi. So it means you're not losing time if and when you do need to travel from one side of the Atlantic to the other. What I picked up is that the differences and the difficulties arise when you are navigating regulation and legislation that differs, or, as is the case now, is in a state of change in one or both of the areas. If you're working across boundaries like that, I would love to hear your experience, particularly at the moment. You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, when we come back here on Newstalk, we'll hear from the Monaghan-based company that helps those secure a job in a new region to acclimatise and comply with local legal requirements. Stay tuned.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's show. Before the break, I brought you my conversation with Declan and Niall McNiff of Real Time Recruitment. And we know that tech talent in particular is in demand, but it's not as straightforward as booking a flight. There are many other considerations. Whilst in Boston as part of Ireland Gateway to Europe, I met a man who has the answers.
Francis May, CEO of 3C Global. So we're opportunity enablers. So we help people move country to country. Businesses move country to country without the need to set up locally in those countries themselves. So we help Irish businesses and UK businesses, European businesses, American businesses to go into different countries and really take up opportunities that are presenting themselves in business.
Explain some of the considerations, because I've only ever worked in Ireland, right? I don't employ people, so I work, I go home, and that's my life.
Yeah.
What are the considerations that businesses have to take into account if they are hiring someone from a different jurisdiction, or if they're looking, as you said there, to either up sticks and move the entire operation?
Yeah, so if you're looking to hire someone internationally, you need to think about the local tax laws, you need to think about the payroll laws, you need to think about employment rights. You know, it's a very multifaceted thing hiring people across different countries, so we try to simplify that and put that in a place where companies are confident to take up new opportunities, confident to send people internationally. And you know, I would say that it can come across as daunting to begin with, but once you do it maybe two or three times with different staff in different countries,
yeah,
you know, our job is to make that easier.
And so how does that work from your side? Because I'm assuming you don't have little whack-a-moles in every country around the world who are just ready to pounce. So
yeah,
when you guys get tagged in,
yeah,
what is it that you're doing?
Yeah, so we're basically the fulcrum between it all. So we help through local experts in different countries. You know, we work with a lot of different advisors. We have a great network, and that's part of why we're here in Boston and in Toronto a few days ago, to expand that network and speak to local people, you know, speak to lawyers, speak to immigration specialists, speak to banking people, for example, and to build out our own network so that companies can utilise that through ourselves to put boots on the ground, basically.
We know that there's been a lot of change politically here in America over the last number of months, and the rules, the regulations, the visa requirements, there's been a lot of change. Has that presented some headaches from your side of things when you are, you know, again, facilitating people making the move to work and to live here?
Yeah, and I think in what I learned in Toronto was it's kind of like, you know, given my accent, obviously, from Armagh, business based in Monaghan, it's kind of like the Brexit vibes of maybe 7-8 years ago, where, you know, you've your closest trading partners changing up the rules. And it's a very politically sensitive thing to talk about as well, you know, because, you know, America has always been a great place for Irish people to come, work, do business. But, you know, you feel that's sort of changing a little bit, but, you know, still very welcome, still very open, still very, Irish people are very well connected, Irish businesses are very well connected in America and in Canada. So I feel that, yeah, things are changing, but we'll always find a way to work through it, you know.
And you mentioned there that you guys are based in Monaghan. What's the business scene like in Monaghan? It's a part of Ireland that I don't know that well. I know Shane Hannan, off the ball Shane Hannan.
Yeah.
He's my Monaghan ambassador.
Yeah.
But just give me a bit of a sense of the business and the vibrancy of the community up there.
Well, yeah. Monaghan is nearly like another entity in itself on this trip, right? So there's so many people, great business people, doing really well. You know, Enterprise Ireland well represented in Monaghan. There's 5 or 6 different companies here, Monaghan origins. There's, you know, massive global businesses. You know, you've got Combilift, you've got Moffitt, who are doing things at scale from Monaghan, you know, that are absolutely mind-blowing, you know. From a small county on the border, you know, there's global things happening from Monaghan that you actually wouldn't maybe take into account. That's, you know, a lot of people, to my mind anyway, view Monaghan as a very quiet, soft border place. But to, you know, the reality of setting up there and, you know, ourselves,
yeah,
and working there and speaking to business people and going to different events, you know, there's so many things happening. It's really exciting. And I would say that, you know, Monaghan is definitely up there with one of the best places I've ever worked. And, you know, I've worked in London, I've worked in Dublin, I've worked obviously from home, and then set up in Armagh, and Monaghan is tip top. You know, I couldn't say a bad word about it, you know.
And in terms of your own company, what are the job titles? Like, what are the roles? Do you have, like, you know, fixers and finders or whatever it is? Or, like, just tell me a little bit more about your own operation.
Yeah, so us internally, yeah, I would say that it's heavily network focused. It's heavily local advisor focused. You know, our own staff internally are absolutely brilliant at dealing with complex queries from people who are working internationally, and you know, they're it's not easy, right? It's not easy to figure out tax laws in different 20 or 30 different countries. You know, like we've engaged people in about 40 countries, and you know, you find that it takes a lot of background work to go into to doing that and helping companies to do that. Firstly, compliantly, but then to also navigate the employment law side of things, the tax law side of things, and just make sure that that's all done. So our staff are very, you know, it's been a bit of a learning curve. It's a very niche industry within a niche, I would nearly say, that requires a lot of work. But, you know, our own staff internally are doing great at working with different contractors and different companies and employees who are trying to figure this stuff out. So, you know, I've been doing this for 14 years. I don't know everything. So how would somebody who's a first-time business or contractor or employee going to go and work internationally themselves? You know, I can understand how daunting it is, but having trod that path a few times, you know, you kind of know the go-to spots of where to look and what to do and how to set it up, you know, in a way that works for them and everyone else, you know.
Yeah, that was Francis May speaking to me in Boston as part of Ireland Gateway to Europe. And that's it from me this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. I'll be back with Pat Kenny on Tuesday morning. But in the meantime, have a great weekend.
My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.